This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Jack Medalli, sophomore from Tennessee, gets a bucket, but AU going to get the bigger prize. It is an American success story. For the first time since 2014, the Eagles, Patriot League champions, flying back to the NCAA tournament.
And a lot of people in town really happy about that. They beat Navy 74-52 at Bender on Wednesday night to clinch the Patriot League title. They now face Mount St. Mary's Wednesday in Dayton, 6:40 p.m. tip in a 16-versus-16 game for the right to move in to the main draw on Friday. Joining us right now is the head coach of American University, Dwayne Simpkins, who most of you know in town, played at Maryland, played at DeMatha, played at Maryland. He's been coaching in this area now for so many years, was the head coach at Sidwell, head coach at St. Albans, an assistant at Mason for many years, and now in his second year at AU, he's got the Eagles into the tournament. I talked about something the other day as it related to you, because I could be wrong, and you'll correct me if I am, but I think this will be your first NCAA tournament game as a coach or player since that loss against Steve Nash in Santa Clara in 1996. Yeah. Is that correct, or did you go with Greensboro or with Mason in one of those years as an assistant?
No. I told my staff, I told Jackie Manuel, that who's on my staff, he's, you know, went to Carolina, won a national championship, and I was like, Jack, you know what? I'd have been there damn 30 years. And he was like, man, really? I was like, yeah. You know, when I was at Greensboro, when I left to take the job at Mason, we recruited a really good crop of kids. We had a really good recruiting class. And that class, by the time they were seniors, I guess 2 years later, they helped Wes Miller get to the NCAA tournament. But yeah, right, man, I haven't experienced it in quite some time. So yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back to it.
All right, I want to talk about what's upcoming for you guys, but one of the things I mentioned in telling that story is that Gary's often told the story that he tried to convince all of you guys, you know, you and Exery and Johnny, that Steve Nash could really play, but he's told the story that you looked at Nash in warmups and all of you guys thought he can't play. Is that true or not?
That's a damn lie. No, that's absolutely not. I mean, I didn't know Steve Nash, the Steve Nash that we all knew, but, you know, basketball players recognize basketball players. We had watched enough tape and we knew he was a good player, you know. And for the record, people like, oh man, Steve Nash had a triple double on you. And like, I didn't guard him. X-ray guarded him, you know.
Right.
Coach Williams wanted somebody with more length and everything on him, but really good team, man. We were not as obviously without Joe. Joe went to the league the year before. We were not as good. And we weren't as connected. You know, it's just That was a tough year. Even though we did go to the NCAA tournament, I think that we still did not perform up to the expectations that we had.
Dwayne Simpkins was part of Gary and Maryland's resurgence in the early to mid-90s, was the starting point guard on the first three Gary Williams tournament teams in College Park. The first two went to the Sweet 16. I'll still never forget that win over UMass to get to that Sweet 16 against, by the way, the remaining portion, minus Weber, I believe, of the Fab Five. I think everybody but Weber was still there, right?
Yep. All those guys were there. Juwan Howard was coming into that game. His averages coming into that game, it was crazy. It was like 31 points, 11 rebounds, three blocks, or something like that. And it was ironic because our freshman year, I remember vividly myself, Johnny Rose, Astree Hip, you know, sitting in a dorm room watching the Fab Five play and, like, cheering them on when they played Carolina and everything. Like, we kind of looked up to them. And then, you know, a year later to be playing against those guys in the Sweet 16 was pretty surreal. It was a pretty cool experience.
Yeah, and it was a competitive game. I mean, I think we had a shot in that game. I mean, the UMass game was the payback because I'm pretty sure we had lost to UMass earlier in the year in the regular season.
We lost to UMass in the up in Springfield, Mass.
Right.
You know, got hosed by the referees, and like Dante Bright was on that team, was a McDonald's All-American. We were on the same All-American team. We were on the same AAU team. Lou Rowe was on that team.
Mike
Williams, rest in peace. Canby, Derek Kellogg, like they had a loaded team. And man, they were talking so much trash once the game was over. And like we were pissed. And when we saw their name pop up in the same bracket as us, man, we were like, oh yeah, we couldn't look past St. Louis, but we took care of St. Louis, and we were so excited to play UMass, man. And I don't know if you remember, Kevin, we were dead in the water, man. We were down 18 or whatever it was, and Mario Lucas came off the bench and shot a bad shot that he ended up making, and that got us going, man. And we ended up, you know, pretty much walking away with that win to go to the Sweet 16.
We used to basically put a stopwatch on Mario Lucas when he got in the game, how long it would take him to put it up, because he was not afraid.
No, it didn't take long for Mario to get one up, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about your team. So when did you know at this during the season that you had a team capable of winning the league and advancing to where you are now?
I mean, quite honest, Kevin, I felt that the year before. When I got the job, I knew we had some talent. The question was going to be, you know, how soon could we get them to play, quote-unquote, our style? You know, we were going to play faster. We weren't going to be playing like Loyola Marymount back in the day, but we were going to play faster. That's going to take time. You know, they were used to playing the Princeton offense, but I felt with the pieces that we had, the main pieces between Elijah Stevens, our point guard, Matt Rogers, obviously, I felt that we had some ingredients that we could compete and potentially win our first year. And I'll go to my grave saying that, man, if we don't have the injuries that we had last year, I mean, we finished the season with like three walk-ons playing 15 minutes a game. If we didn't have those injuries, you know, instead of us finishing 10-8, in league, tie for second, you know, I think we probably win two or three more games. We got a shot at winning that thing last year. But the main thing coming into this season was making sure that we could get Matt Rogers to come back. You know, he had some Power Four schools offering him some, you know, a couple of dollars here and there. And, you know, I had to state the case to him, say, hey, man, like, you've put in a tremendous amount of work here on and off the court. You're a business school graduate. You've got all these connections that you have and will have if you stay here. And more importantly, from a basketball perspective, man, we got a chance to cut the nets down. And this wouldn't be possible if we didn't have Matt Rogers in our roster. You know, it is what it is. And when he decided to come back, I knew we had a legitimate shot.
You know, what you just said is something that I bet you a lot of coaches pitch it in a lot of different ways, but the opportunity that a kid like Matt Rogers has, and I'm going to guess that he's probably not an NBA player, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe he'll play professionally, it's, you know, overseas or wherever for a few years, but the opportunity in a town like this one with the relationships that he'll make as a business major, as you mentioned, you know, graduating from AU, I mean, there's a bigger life play here for some of these kids.
Yeah, 100%. You know, we're not none of our guys have delusions of grandeur that they're going to be, you know, NBA players. Matt does want to play in Europe, and he's going to he's going to play a good number of years in Europe, and I think he's going to make some pretty good money. I played over there a number of years, and a guy who's 6'9" that can shoot 43-40% for three in Europe, like, he's going to have a long career if he chooses to have one. And that was part of the pitch too, you know. I got him on some Zooms with two or three agents that deal with international teams and players and everything, and they all pretty much told him exactly what I told him. I said, you know, Matt, you can go to said school in the ACC and average, you know, 6 points a game and play 15 minutes a game. They're not, these GMs and teams that may sign you next year, they're not going to look at what you did the year before at American when you put up pretty good numbers. They're going to look at what you did most recently. And I said, this could be the difference between you getting your first contract at X and or stay here, put up a banner, put up good numbers, and now you're making Y that could potentially be 20, 30 grand more in your first year. And it puts you on the track to now, in 2 years' time, you know, being close to figures and everything. So I laid that out to him. It was affirmed by the agents that I put him in contact with. And, you know, he made an educated decision. I thought he made a great one.
I don't know how many years you played internationally. I mean, I remember you playing internationally in a bunch of different countries. How many different countries did you play in, and for how long?
I had two different stints. So I played my first 3 years when I was in France. I was in Belgium. I was in Italy. So those first 2 years. And then I took 3 years off, and that's when I started dibbling and dabbling in coaching. You know, I was an assistant coach for the JV team at DeMatha. I was a part of Joe Wooten's first staff at Bishop O'Connell before I decided, you know, I haven't gotten basketball completely out of my system, and I went back and played for another 3 years. I was in China, finished my career in Europe in Milan, Italy. So I spent a little time over there. Great experience.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because I've talked to people, you know, before, a lot of people, you know, Darren McClinton and a bunch of different people that have played in a lot of different countries. A lot of you guys have said, and I'm curious as to what you would say, that the experience of playing in all of those different countries, playing abroad, you know, playing in places that don't speak the language you speak, was just an incredible overall experience.
It was, you know, from a cultural perspective, you know, I got a chance to go places, man, that I otherwise would not have been able to go to. You know, I got a chance to go to Rome, spent 10 months living in Milan, Italy, you know, going
not
to
a bad spot to live in, huh?
Yeah, man, I was 45 minutes from Switzerland. Every Sunday we were off, I'd go up there and hang out on Lake Como. Like, I couldn't have done that without this basketball. And more importantly, you know, from a lifelong perspective, you know, I knew I wanted to get into coaching at some point in time. I had some really good coaches, and, you know, some European coaches and Eastern European coaches, their teaching and methodology and articulation of some basketball concepts, are some of them are really, like, completely different. And at the time I'm playing, I'm like, man, this is, like, so backwards. And here we are 25, 30 years later, and it's like, some of those things are actually, I apply them right now. So from a coaching perspective, man, I got exposed to a different way of teaching and a different way of looking at the game of basketball that has actually helped enhance my ability to coach the game of basketball.
Talking to Dwayne Simpkins, head coach of AU. So give me an example. What did you take from your experience overseas into coaching?
I haven't implemented this, but it's funny. Me and my staff, we had hours of debate on this last year, because, like, we're a denied team. We're out in the passing lanes and everything. So you're taught from, like, sixth grade, seventh grade, whatever it is, elementary school. When you're in the passing lane, if you're guarding somebody, let's say, on the left wing, you get your left hand in the passing lane. That's what I've been taught all my life. And my year that I was in France, I had a coach who's crushing it now in the EuroLeague, one of the best coaches in the world. He was teaching the complete opposite. Instead of having your left hand in the passing lane, you would turn your body and you would have your right hand in the passing lane. And me and him went back and forth on it. But if you think about it, if you are in position and a guy does drive, you don't have to open yourself up to now help in the gap. Like, you're already there. So it's just little nuances, things like that. He taught me, man, I became a really good ball screen point guard, just reading the defense when I came off of ball screens. Back before I thought you used a ball screen so that you could score, and that's not the case. The idea is that you put two on the ball, and now as a point guard, you've got to read, all right, where does this pass go to? And that pass may not be the assist, but that may be the pass that leads to the assist because you made the proper play. So things like that, man, I've learned, and it made me a better player then, and it's making me a better coach now.
What did you take from Morgan Wooten and Gary Williams into your coaching career? Give me, like, one from each.
Well, from both of them, I would say process, just being process-based and letting the outcome be a byproduct of the work that you put in. They were very similar in that, you know, every single day treated like a championship. You know, Gary, I mean, we could beat Wake Forest by 10 on the road, and we got Carolina coming up on Tuesday night, and we walk into practice and think like, all right, we're going to have a nice, you know, chill practice, and you would have thought we lost by 25, and like it was us against the world. Like, he had an innate ability to make you just get yourself up to play as hard as you possibly can for the next opponent. From Coach Wooten, the biggest thing, man, in terms of like just teaching and the connection with the players that I have as people and teaching life skills and being really conscious of, like, I'm a teacher first and foremost, you know. Yeah, we all want to win basketball games. I have to win basketball games in order to keep my job. But, you know, I try to impart so much, man, on these guys from my experiences as a dad, as a husband, so that I can prepare these guys for life beyond basketball.
All right, let's talk about Mount St. Mary's. First of all, well, you know, you guys watched the pairing show, I'm sure. Were you expecting to be a 16?
Yeah, okay. I was expecting, you know, just the strength of the Patriot League. You know, yeah. we didn't have any marquee victories non-conference, so I knew we were going to be probably a 16.
Yeah, you played Carolina early. That was not a close game, but you played at High Point there in the tournament, and that was a competitive game. So yeah. You didn't play Mount St. Mary's this year. You played them last year. What do you know about them? What are the keys to winning on Wednesday night?
Well, different team. You know, they are Donnie Lynn's the coach now. He's done a tremendous job in his first year. So a different team. They had a few guys that are still the point guard there from St. Stephen St. Andrews here locally is still the point guard there. But personnel's changed. You know, we're going to have to handle their pressure, in particular on dead balls. They'll utilize what we called it at Maryland at the time, 55s, a diamond press. They're going to try to trap the first pass. So we've got to be prepared for that. You know, they're going to shoot some threes, some good ones, some bad ones. You know, we got to make sure that we're contesting those. That's going to be really, really big. We know that that's what they rely on. And then conversely, that's something that we've actually been pretty, pretty good at. We're like top 125 in the country in terms of our three-point percentage defense and allowing them the fewest number of threes made. So, you know, that's going to be a tough task for us, and we got to be ready to do that, and we got to take care of the basketball.
How much do you look ahead to, you know, and how much scouting of Duke do you do before, you know, a potential matchup Friday?
Absolutely none. When I was an assistant coach, I would try to do that, man. It never worked out. It was like it was bad mojo or something like that. And I've seen Duke enough on TV. I'm like, all right, yeah, it's Cooper Flagg and this guy and that guy. Like, sprint your ass back on defense. Box out as hard as you possibly can. Don't turn it over. You know, so right. I haven't looked at them at all, to be honest with you.
Really rooting for you. I know a lot of people in town are. I mean, you have grinded it out, and you're in a great spot right now. Best of luck on Wednesday night, Dwayne. Hope you get a win.
Thank you so much, Kevin. I appreciate it, man.
Dwayne Simpkins, everybody. AU against Mount St. Mary's in Dayton on Wednesday night, 6:40. And then the winner gets Duke on Friday at 2:50 in Raleigh. Duke's playing in Raleigh, right, Denton? I think they are. Pretty sure they are.
If they better be. If Louisville is in Lexington, they better be. Duke better be in Raleigh.
I think Duke's playing in Raleigh. I think that the other Eastern Seaboard site was Providence, right? So they'd be playing in Raleigh. So let's get AU. Look, Mount St. Mary's was coached for several years by a guy by the name of Dan Engelstadt, who is a guy that played basketball at my alma mater, Walt Whitman, who lost in the state finals, by the way, on Saturday night to Laurel. Congrats to Laurel, but another incredible run to the state finals for Chris Lunn and Whitman. But he did a great job at the Mount, and I think now he is an assistant at Syracuse. I think that's where he went. Good luck to Dwayne Simpkins. Would love to see him, you know, get that win and then maybe scare Duke for a half. I don't think they can beat Duke, but you never know. We've had some 16s over ones. Two of them in the last 5 years, right? UVA 5 years ago? Not 5 years ago. We didn't have a tournament 5 years ago. 6 years ago now.
I think UVA was seven. We're getting old.
2019. I think it was the 2019. Oh, they won it in 2019. 2018.
Right.
Yeah. And then Purdue in 2022 or 21.
2023, and then they got to the Final Four in 2020, and they got championship in 2024.
Lost in the finals last year, 2023, right? All right. Up next, we'll talk to Matt Schick from ESPN. He covers college basketball. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Matt Schick does work for ESPN. He does work for SiriusXM, the Big Ten Network. You can follow him on X, on Twitter, at ESPN underscore Schick, S-C-H-I-C-K. He joins us right now to talk NCAA tournament. I was just going through your tweets from yesterday, and I'm assuming the sarcasm was about the end of the Big Ten tournament final between Wisconsin and Michigan. You wrote, there should be a new rule that you must review every play in every game. No reason why these games shouldn't last 4 hours. There were four reviews over like 25 seconds of game time at the end of that for out of bounds, you know, possession. That was absurd. It took forever. What are they going to do about that?
Well, probably nothing, but I was on a run and listening on the radio as I'm running, just listening to the second half of the game because I'm weird like that. I don't listen to music. I listen to people talk. And I'm listening, and they keep saying, oh, they're going to go to the review. Oh, now they're asking for the review. It's like once that hits 2 minutes, the players are programmed to ask for a review. Hey, we want to review it. We want to review it. We should could do that in the home, you know, when you're accused of doing something wrong. But yeah, it's it just took forever. It's just every single thing. And, you know, frankly, a few of those were reversed. And so, you know, I get it, but, you know, at some point, I mean, we just got to move on. Oh. I mean, it's just, why is the 2 minute demarcation the biggest thing? Why not 1 minute? Why not 45 seconds? You know, I understand it, but the last 2 minutes of a game should not take 20.
Yeah. Young kid sent to his room and he starts making the circle motion with his hand.
That's
we got to
right.
go to the review and check
That's
it
right.
out. Just a disaster that the end of that Big Ten game. Here's what it does too, Matt. It ruins all the momentum of the game and the drama of the game, which is not good for the game. You know, it's one thing when you see a lot of free throws at the end of a game that's closely called. That we get that. We understand that. But and the other part of it is if they can't figure it out in 30 seconds to a minute tops, it's just got to stay with whatever they called on the floor. But the Big Ten officials were absurd all weekend. So I want to start there. Do you think Indiana should have gotten in over North Carolina or West Virginia should have gotten in over North Carolina?
I would have sorted them West Virginia 1, Indiana 2, North Carolina 3. That's how I would have slotted them for getting in. You know, some of the reasoning stuff with this is just like if you're going to cite If folks online with North Carolina are going to cite metrics, then that should be cited when the selection committee chair or the vice chair is out there making the statements. Like, they should be more prepared to give a defense for the most controversial pick than it felt like they were on national television. And I get it's a thankless job, but there's a reason that Bubba Cunningham, that the selection committee chair had to have a vice chair there. When you have to have the vice chair there, it means, yes, we know we're going to get asked about this, and right. I can't talk about it. It's going to be controversial. That was the first question that's out there. And so just be ready to state a case. West Virginia, more quad one wins. And if you're like, well, it's not just about quad one wins. Okay, well, then what are we talking about? Then Texas is in because of the number of quad one wins. You can go down the list of, okay, is it metrics here? Is it quad one wins here? Is it this? It's a mosaic. I understand that. But it's like I tweeted out, it's like, can 90 of 111 bracketologists all be wrong about this? I guess so. Looking at the bracket matrix, it doesn't mean that groupthink is always right. We've seen that before in this country, but at the same time, 1-12, and you've got those 13 opportunities, and you fail on 12 of them. To me, that's very disqualifying. And I was surprised. It was nice to see it early, so that everyone could just spend the entire show being outraged about it.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing about North Carolina, as I would say, to their credit, no one is playing better basketball that was on the bubble than North Carolina, and winning 8 of 10, those two losses to Duke. Playing better, winning close games, that's all good. So in terms of the way they're playing, they earned it. In terms of the resume, just didn't feel it.
Yeah, I mean, Cooper Flagg didn't play for Duke, and I don't know that game would have been a sweat for Duke had he played. I actually thought Indiana was playing pretty well down the stretch. It was a disappointing effort in the Big Ten, second round game against Oregon, but you know they beat Purdue. They went on the road and beat Michigan State in the last month. I actually thought that they had made a decent case, but what else? Yeah, go ahead.
No. To that point, I mean, I did too. The win at Michigan State was very loud. The win against Purdue put them in the conversation. And then losing two of their last three, both to Oregon, who's a quality team. You know, beating Ohio State, I felt that was an elimination game. Ohio State's
right.
out, Indiana's in. Just like they did at the end of the regular season. And even in their losses, you know, they were not getting blown out outside of the game against Illinois. I mean, they were playing pretty good basketball over the last month and a half. And so, yeah, it's too bad for Mike Woodson to have that happen. I would have been very curious to see how the committee would have treated them if they beat Oregon. You know, if they beat Oregon, are we citing quad one now? Because they still had more quad one wins over than North Carolina did. So what is that conversation if that would have happened? We won't know that, but yeah, I was very surprised.
I'm curious, with the Villanova job open, the Indiana job open, if you know Carolina hadn't gotten in and Hubert Davis was let go, how would you rank those three jobs?
I would rank them Indiana 1, North Carolina 2, Villanova 3, and I only say that because of conference affiliation,
right?
And fan base and fervor and tradition and all that stuff, and what you're willing to do to compete. I mean, this year in the ACC was not a great brochure for the league, unfortunately, and you don't know what the next 10 years in the ACC looks like. You know the Big Ten is going to be fine, and you know that Indiana, anyone can step in there and win at Indiana. It just takes recruiting and evaluating and getting the right guys in the portal, which they just haven't been able to do the last few years. I think Indiana out of those three would be the best.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like you would have had the same answer I would have had 3 or 4 years ago, which would have been Carolina's easily
correct.
Number one.
Correct.
But it's the future
correct.
Of the ACC. I mean,
that's all it is.
Yeah,
that's all it is. It's just a little in flux, a little less stable, especially with the decrease in the essentially the buyout for schools that want to leave. So yeah, in a vacuum, it's North Carolina without question. With conferences, it's Indiana.
We are speaking with Matt Schick. Matt does a show on Sirius XM Big Ten Network, does a lot of work for ESPN as well. What else from the bracket bothered you?
Louisville getting an 8, I thought was more egregious than North Carolina getting into the field. How can Louisville be an 8 and North Carolina be an 11?
Right.
I mean, what are we even talking about?
How do they let them play in Lexington?
Yeah, and that was almost like the, all right, we'll give you an 8, but we'll let you play in Lexington type of thing. Like, that's not how that works.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's giving Louisville an 8. Is not fair to Louisville. It's also not fair to Auburn. And I know there are those out there saying, well, if Auburn can't beat Louisville, they shouldn't be in there anyway. Okay, that's not how this works. The number one overall seed should have, in theory, the easiest path to the Sweet 16. And that's not the case when you might have to play a top 15, a consensus top 15 at the very worst, top 20 team in the second round. So, we need to be think about rewarding these teams like Auburn, head and shoulders. They could lose the last 5 games. They nearly did, and still be the number one overall seed. Okay, so what's the point if you might have to play Louisville and Lexington? And frankly, Ryan Kalkbrenner and Creighton. I mean, if there's a big man that can defend Jai Broom, it's the 4-time defensive player in the year in the Big East. So that was a seeding that surprised me. I think Michigan, why even play the game on Sunday?
Right.
That bracket was done. The bracket was done.
Do you think the bracket's done before the conference tournaments with respect to seeding? Maybe not entrance, but seeding.
I think there's a pretty good shell of who's going where and what going into the week. And I mean, I have to talk with some folks that have been in the room recently, but you know, I think it's more about who's in than the seeding. But I do believe, like late Saturday, like that thing's put together, and Sunday rolls around, and it's just here's your contingency bracket. If UAB beats Memphis, we'll kick North Carolina out. Here's the bracket, what it would look like, because you can't. I mean, it's made for TV. You can't be waiting until the end of the Big Ten championship to, all right, now where do we put Michigan? Because the domino effects could be ridiculous. And I get it from the Big Ten perspective, too, because you don't want to punt on that great window. I mean, that's the most watched regular season game of the season. It goes right into the selection
into
show.
The pairing show. Yeah. I mean, I said the same thing. How does Michigan beat Purdue, Maryland, and Wisconsin and end up being seeded lower than all of them? I mean, I didn't mention this, but I'll mention it to you. I mean, I'm a Maryland guy. I don't know how Maryland beats Wisconsin head-to-head. They've got a better net, better KenPom. They've got a better quad one record, and they're the 4 and Wisconsin's the 3. It seemed like it had been trending that way all along. I don't know how that worked out. I don't hate Maryland's draw. I mean, you do a lot with the Big Ten. Tell me the teams out of the Big Ten that you think have a chance to make a deep run, and how deep.
Well, I think I was going to pencil Maryland into the Final 4, and then I saw them paired with Florida, and that's in the Sweet 16, and that's just unfortunate. Because I don't think a team is playing better than Florida right now nationally. But you know, as long as Maryland doesn't get into foul trouble, I think they'll be okay, you know, in the matchup. But Florida's guard play is just outstanding. So I would hesitate on Maryland simply because of the Florida issue that would be standing in their way. Going down the list of some other Big Ten teams, I think High Point, who I've called a couple of their games this season, they have some high major transfers that have been really good for them. If they can defend the ball screen offense that Purdue's going to run, then I think they'll be right in there with Purdue. Other Big Ten teams, I think I think Wisconsin, because of John Tonjay, the fact that he was one for 14,
crazy,
and they were basically a bucket away from maybe winning the basketball game, gives you a lot of confidence about what Wisconsin can do. Maybe they were just gassed with their fourth game in 4 days. But I really like Wisconsin, and I think any team coached by Dana Altman has a chance to pull off an upset. I mean, Nate Biddle, Shelstad, these guys are good players. It's a good coach. And, yeah, they came up short in the Big Ten tournament. But there aren't many coaches that I'd pick outside of Dana Altman that I think can do more with less. And I think Oregon against Arizona would be an incredible matchup, and then putting them against Duke would be a really good chess match.
You didn't mention Izzo and Michigan State.
Yeah, I think Michigan State has the Final Four potential as well. I love their draw. I think their draw was probably the best out of all of them. I think Bryant is, talking to some folks who have called Bryant games, they are sneaky good with some high major transfers as well. And that's the thing that I do wonder as we get into this tournament. You're like, how is that 15 hanging in there with that two? Well, you heard of the portal? Those things might become a little more commonplace than they were in the past. But, as I scrolled through and neglecting Michigan State is shame on me. But I think, especially with the injury at Iowa State, I think they have as good a shot as any to get to an Elite Eight, if not a Final Four, simply because they're just built as a complete team. They don't have a lot of high scores. Jason Richardson has come on well over the last month, but they've got a lot of good pieces. And you're not finding a multiple McDonald's All-Americans, but you're finding a Hall of Fame coach who does a lot.
Matt, is it me? I said this to Denton today. I've said it the last couple of weeks. I know Auburn's the number one overall seed, but I think the other three number ones are better. I actually think St. John's and Tennessee is twos are better. They're not overwhelmingly dominant the way when you watch Duke, when you watch Florida, when you watch Houston, especially on the defensive end. What do you think?
I could buy that. I could buy that with Auburn. That it's not necessarily an overwhelming team. They just find ways to win. Now, over the last few days, that hasn't necessarily happened. But I do wonder if that's also not necessarily a bad thing going into this field. Some of their best wins were like a month ago, right? So it's not like this team has been running over everybody over the last few weeks. That just hasn't happened. I'm with you on Duke. I think Duke doing what they did in the ACC tournament without two of their best players and without potentially the best player in the country, I think there's a reason Duke is the odds-on favorite in terms of betting odds and money to win this whole thing. And as long as Cooper's healthy, then I'm with you on that. I think one of the great things about a team like St. John's, it can be a good thing and a bad thing. I'll subscribe to the good thing, is that they are one of the worst, if not the worst, three-point shooting team in the country. This is not a team that lives by the three. And I think that can be a good thing in the NCAA tournament. When you're relying on defense, you're relying on other aspects of your game. Same thing with Michigan State. These are two of the worst three-point shooting teams in all of college basketball. Houston, I used to cover them on a somewhat regular basis when they were in the American. And I remember watching these games and calling and seeing them in practice going, who would ever want to play these teams? Who would ever want to play this Houston team? They just make things so painful for you. Their draw was great, too. And the Tennessee with their defense. I mean, Florida just made it look easy yesterday. So that's where I think Florida as well, in terms of how teams are playing, I'd probably put Auburn fourth in line, but they're pretty complete as well. It's hard to imagine anyone outside the top two seed lines getting in, but we say that getting into the Final Four, but we say that every year. And, more often than not, there's someone outside those seed lines that finds a way.
Talking to Matt Schick with Big Ten Network on SiriusXM, does a lot of work with ESPN as well. So real quickly for Maryland, is there any concern with Grand Canyon? If you don't know a bunch about him, that's fine. I'm just curious.
I haven't done enough research on GCU to give you a great answer on that, but I will just say I think all it comes down to for Maryland in these first couple of games is just make sure your starters are on the court. Don't get into foul trouble. Make sure Derek Queen is being who he is, and Gillespie continues to give good production. This is a team that does a lot of really good things well. I think their starting five is one of the best in the country, and as long as they're on the floor, they'll be fine. But that's kind of a blind thought, because I'd be lying to you if I said I watched film on Grand Canyon.
No worries. Give me your winner, and then give me a team, a sleeper Final Four team, outside the top 16.
I'll take, because of their path and because of just how good they've been, I'll take Duke. I'll take Duke winning the national championship. If you want a sleeper team or a team outside of the top two seed lines that might be able to make a little bit of a run, I hesitate to say it, but I think in terms of quick turnarounds and matchup problems that can be provided because of what they run and who they can put on the floor. I mean, they just put three bigs on the floor in the Big Ten championship game. I think Michigan is one of those teams that I think UC San Diego could give them some fits. They're a pretty good team too. But I think Michigan is the kind of team that, fast forward, if they can win these first couple of games, and who knows about A&M and Yale, and I get all of that. But, you put that collection on the floor, and the way Trey Donaldson is playing, the momentum that they've got, and with Wolf and Golden and now Will Cheddar, who's a 6'8 guy, they put all three of them on the floor at one time. That can provide some interesting matchups. And if the tournament is all about matchups, which is the cliche we've heard since the dawn of time, then maybe Michigan is a team that can surprise some folks and build off the momentum for the Big Ten championship.
It's funny, because a couple of weeks ago, I'm like, they're not good at all. Their guards aren't good enough. Maryland went there and won, and they didn't even play well. And on Saturday, they out rebounded Maryland 47-18. Matt, I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah, and frankly, I said this last week that no team in the Big Ten needed a long stay in Indianapolis more than Michigan did, because if they went one and done in that Big Ten tournament, I mean, what are we even talking about? Who knows? Maybe they're still getting a five seed, tongue in cheek, but There's no real tangible evidence that this team could do anything. They're on a skid. They would have lost three or four straight going in, but now with this momentum, now with Trey Donaldson and being kind of the head of the snake at the guard position, and it's a fascinating matchup. They got a nice coaching edge. Dusty May knows how to get to a Final Four, which is odd to say with his time at FAU. But I'm not all in on Michigan, but certainly feeling a lot better on them this time than I was a week ago.
One other quick thought for you in watching Michigan this weekend. Braden Smith was the Big Ten Player of the Year. I love watching him play, but, man, he is in a slump right now, and they need his scoring if they're going to win a couple of games in this tournament. Purdue does.
They do. It can't all be about Trey Kaufman Red. No. You're going to have some scoring from Braden Smith. And I'll just say this, and I know we're kind of homers for teams that we've called in this business, but this High Point team has, you win 15 straight. They've got some high major players. Bobby Pettiford played at Kansas. Keza Jiffa was a junior college All-American. Kamani Hamilton is a transfer from Mississippi State. They're going to walk in that gym. I mean, Justin Bodo is a 7-footer who can protect at the rim. If you're going to walk into that gym and you're Purdue, you're going to be like, okay, this doesn't look like a low major team. And so there's a reason they've won a bunch in a row, and everyone's hot at this juncture, at least those that are AQs. And so those are the teams you got to watch out for.
That university is an interesting university. I mean, that I forget when they turned D1. It was maybe 10 years ago, but they brought in this you know, Wall Street guy that raised a bunch of money and turned that school and that athletic department around. He is, I forget his name. It starts with a Q, it's, the school president.
Nito
Cubain. I'm sorry, do you know it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and raised a bunch of money, dynamic, you know, motivator, speaker, and that school now plays sports. I didn't remember that 15 years ago.
Yeah, no, it was 2000 when they made it to D1, and yeah, he's worth millions of bucks.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Really appreciate it.
You got it. Anytime.
Yeah. Matt Schick, everybody. Denton, I took one of my kids on one of those Carolina, you know, college trip visit things, Elon, Wake Forest, High Point, and mixed in, I think, maybe around at Pinehurst in the middle of it. But that's beside the point. This dude that took over that school, High Point, which is in this area that's like the furniture capital of the world, High Point, North Carolina, like every major furniture company is there. This I thought when I went to visit the school with my son that I was checking into the Ritz-Carlton. It was so high-end, beautiful. They had hired this guy. He had made a ton of money, I think on Wall Street, I think it was, maybe a hedge fund, came in, raised a bunch of money, and said, we're going to start playing Division I football. They were already playing Division I basketball, I guess. And I think this is their first trip to the tournament. Am I right? Here's his name. His name's Nito Cubain. I was right about the Q part. I couldn't just professional. Money raiser and speaker. Incredible dynamic personality he was. But anyway.
This is their first trip to the tournament.
Yeah. I bet they've got some NIL money at High Point. Just guessing. All right. We've got Ben coming up at 12. Couple of things to get to when we return. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. So I've got two things for you, Denton, before we get to football with Ben standing at 12. And that is, number one, I was watching NBA TV last week, and I wrote this down. And the reason I'm bringing it up now is because you actually asked me during the break, have you seen John Wall as an analyst on NBA TV? I had written it down as a note in my phone last week because I was watching NBA TV one late night and John Wall was an analyst. And I'm like, wow, he is really good. I mean, John was never a great interview, but we're going to get him on the show. He was not a, you know, there are really great interviews, and then there are guys that are average interviews. John was average, but he was also very young, and it wasn't probably his favorite thing to do. John in the media as an analyst, I thought was excellent. So let's get him on definitely before the NBA playoffs, maybe after March Madness. I don't know if anybody else has seen John Wall as an NBA analyst on NBA TV, but he's excellent. You were going to say something, and I said, save it for the air. What were you going to say about Wall?
I mean, Ted or Zach or whoever is in charge of the monumental money, they got to hand him a blank check. Like, if the Wizards are going to be in the play in this rebuild, it's a tough watch. It's a lot easier if you're trying to get younger generations to get John Wall on the program.
So you saw him too, and you thought he was good.
I thought he was really good. It's like it's the kind of basketball analysis that I like because it's way more basketball than it is anything
Me
else.
Too.
You know, it's not. I do like the theatrics when it's like NBA on TNT. I think those guys have perfected it. But I don't need to see theatrics from everybody when they go on television. Sometimes I just want to see the basketball stuff. And I think as he's gotten a little bit older and you know just life experience, I think he's really really good. And it is a shame that when you think about it, Monumental and even before then a little bit Comcast Sportsnet, like they don't really keep the Wizards players in-house for their Wizards coverage, right? John was a superstar here. They need to get him in some capacity on television because I do think he is the kind of...
It's Chris Miller and Drew Gooden as the broadcast team, correct?
Yes, but I mean, pregame,
I know it's Chris, and
postgame, something like just get him in the building so you can get John on television. Because from like my generation's perspective, and maybe some that are younger than I, we love John Wall. I would watch John Wall on television. I think he is a legit needle mover in the market in terms of getting eyes on your product.
I'll tell you what, in watching him, in I know some people might argue with this because of the way he played, but John was a basketball junkie, a gym rat, and he knows the game, knows the history of the game, knows everything about the game. I was reading something during the break because I wanted to see if there was anything out there about John being really good, and there is. There's some stories written that John Wall, and some Reddit threads where people really like John Wall as an analyst, but there's a story from December when he announced that he was going to try his hand in broadcasting, because right now, I mean, John at this point is what, 34 years old? I mean, I guess there's just not going to be an opportunity for him to play anymore. But there's this thing where he says, the idea of being in broadcasting was born in a fairly simple way. He was home in Miami watching games with friends and kids, and they all ended up telling him the same thing. They're like, shut up and let us watch. So he was, you know, dropping anecdotes, doing strategy, and talking, you know, ball when he was watching games. I think I've watched him twice now. I think he's excellent. The other thing I wanted to mention real quickly for those that missed, because the Wizards have a lot of these young players, you know, in this season of not being very good. They beat the Nuggets. They beat the Pistons and the Nuggets in back-to-back games on the road. You don't want them to win that much, but in their win over Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets on Saturday night, Alex Sarr, the number two pick in the draft for the Wizards, had 34 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, and a block shot. He's the youngest player in Wizards history to ever go for 30 or more, and he's the youngest player in NBA history to go for 30 and 5 in a game. 35 and 5, excuse me. 35 and at least 5 rebounds, 5 assists. He can definitely stroke it. I remember I got into this argument with somebody. It wasn't you. It was somebody. It may have been a caller at some point. And they said, Alex Sarr has a terrible shooting stroke. I'm like, no, he doesn't. He's gonna be a good shooter. You can see it in the stroke. He was 5 of 9 from behind the arc the other night. Jokic had 40. They beat the Nuggets on the road.
Thank God they didn't give up on Alex Sarr after that G League performance where he went 2 of 11, right?
Wasn't that the first game for him?
Or was like the first like 3 G League games, he wasn't all that good. And
terrible.
People were like crying about it because, you know, we had the Johnny Davis thing where Johnny Davis didn't look like he belonged in the G League, and that was worrisome. But Alex Sarr, man, he can play.
In his last two games, he is 8 for 15 from behind the arc, and he is 20 of 40 overall from the floor. Not bad. All right, Ben Standing. We'll talk Skins next.